Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
The Fed hikes the central bank rate once again. Are you seeing any impact on the markets from this?
Well, there's so many things going on. We could talk about whether the Fed has any effect or not, or whether there's some secret activities, as we discussed last week, about manipulation going on at the same time. You know, I touched on that briefly last week. Meanwhile, the Dow dropped today, after winning 13 days in a row, which I think was the first time since the late 1900s or something, 1879 or something, I read somewhere. It's the only time the Dow was up this many days in a row. But getting back to your question, you know, the Fed is just one piece of the puzzle. It's sort of funny, when the banking crisis hit, the stock market took off, and that's why I presented the case that they invoked the plunge protection team, which was created by Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. And, you know, they're out there driving stocks up. They only had to drive seven stocks up, by the way, the Magnificent Seven names, to get the indexes moving. So it's not like it takes a lot of money when you have the printing presses to do stuff. So I thought it was more than coincidence that when the banking crisis hits, the stock market takes off. So I think they were trying to support not only the banks, which seem to be coming back here a little bit, though I still hear many are in trouble, and the stock market goes up. But, you know, it's sort of funny that, in an environment like this, where you can list the problems out there, you know, from potential nuclear war all the way to record heat waves, around the planet, the markets go up, you know, has nothing to do with anything. It's like, you know, put money in people's pockets, and they'll forget anything. You know what I mean? You know, okay, there's storms outside, or there's earthquakes or tornadoes, or Russia's invading Ukraine, or by the way, they're going to be China's going to take over Taiwan tomorrow. You know, whatever it is, but the stock market goes up, everything is okay. So that's sort of the game, and apparently it's a successful one because people seem to be happy out there. But, you know, the bottom line is the Fed is a antiquated institution. It should be abolished. The great book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, written by Mr. Griffin, three decades ago, outlines the history of this ridiculous institution since 1913, has caused, I think, 8 recessions and actually raised rates during depression, and needs to be removed, just like Andrew Jackson abolished the National Bank in the U.S. back in the mid-1800s. The same thing has to happen here. It's not going to happen because there's too many political benefits for having the Fed there manipulating and printing money and doing all kinds of stuff, plus investing in the stock market itself, which nobody even talks about, but has occurred. And we know, when I say this over and over again, the Bank of Japan, I think, controls 70 or 80% of the Japanese stock market in ETFs and stocks. So there's plenty of, and I'm sure the Bank of Japan talks to the Fed here every day. I mean, they're all in cahoots. They're all talking together. They're not in isolated universes. You know what I mean? So the Fed say, yeah, go prop up the stocks in Japan and keep your rates at zero. They're supposed to meet, by the way, tomorrow, Friday. So we'll see what the Bank of Japan's going to do. There was some pressure since they had 0% rates so long, and everybody on the planet is raising rates, and perhaps they need to do the same. But they've been reasonably successful in the last few years in printing money over there and keeping rates zero. So we'll see if that changes tomorrow or not. You know, maybe the Fed here and the ECB are going to pressure the Bank of Japan to start raising rates. But it's been a heaven for the stock players over there, because you can borrow money at zero rates and you can play the market. And unfortunately, you can't do that here in the U.S. and Europe right now. So the Fed is playing its games. Alan Greenspan in the 1980s set the standard for the New York taxi cab driver who slams on the accelerator and then slams on the brakes and messes everybody up and ultimately caused the 1987 crash. And they're setting up again for another event. I mean, you know, they keep rates at zero for 10 years. Now they raise rates dramatically over a period of a few months in a manner that had never been done before. There are consequences for this. And they're just inept people. I mean, I don't know how to state it. I mean, it's like economists who don't know what they're doing, have no sense for the economy, no sense for timing, no sense for the impact of their actions. And that's why I've been so, vocal about getting rid of them, you know, just getting rid of them, you know, abolishing the Federal Reserve. It could be abolished just as easily, and the answer would be let the free market determine rates. You know, we have supposedly a free market out there, but I guess if the Fed's out there manipulating the stock market and interest rates and currency and gold and every other investment vehicle, then you wonder what a free market really is anymore. And maybe the answer is there really is none, you know. So we're just like pawns in a big game, Jim. You know, we're just playing or following their game, hoping to make some money, watching them move stuff around. We try to make a buck in the markets, long or short, whether it's commodity markets or stocks or whatever, just, you know, following their you know, big moves and just trying to, you know, eke some profit out of that. But their actions are not conducive to the perpetuation of a free economy and a free business world. It just causes more problems, you know, debt beyond belief. There's going to be consequences, and I just hope we figure it out somewhere. There's supposed to be something coming in August, as you probably read, I think August 22nd. No alternate currencies being proposed by some of the U.S. Friend nations, and creating a currency perhaps backed by gold or partially backed by gold. So that should be interesting if that happens in late August or not. There's been a lot of rumor and talk about that. And at the same time, you got our government playing around with the stable coins or their version of the Bitcoin. You're testing, I think I read somewhere about 120 banks are testing it out secretly, or if not so secretly, it's not being broadcast that well, that I suppose one morning you're going to wake up. Oh, by the way, you don't have cash in your bank anymore in your checking account. It's now digital currency. And if you go in there and try to get some cash out, oh, by the way, you can't get it because there won't be any more cash. I mean, this type of nonsense is going on. So how do you protect yourself from this, Jim? I don't know.
Yeah, well, right now, my local bank branch says if you want cash, you have to use the ATM. The tellers themselves don't have any cash.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So the bank itself is cash-free.
Question is, should we be hoarding cash? If they make it illegal, then they can arrest you for having cash. This world is not going to end cash because the government says it's going to end cash, because the world doesn't trust the government. That's why cryptocurrencies came into being. And it'll be a real interesting scenario here that they could theoretically outlaw cash, which, you know, there's actually a book that's been out for several years, The War Against Cash. Mm-hmm. And right now you go to the banks, you know, you try to take cash out and put cash in, they can report you. Just a matter of control. The government want to control everybody and control everything. You know, why are we permitting this to happen? You know, we allow politicians to make these decisions for us and keep them in office. Or the average person is so oblivious, doesn't care, that they don't get politically involved to stop this nonsense. It's a mad, mad, mad world. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. So I sit here, I watch the markets, try to make some, you know, calls based on what I see happening on the charts. And, sort of isolated myself for a number of years. I've worked out of my house since the 1980s. And when COVID hit, everybody thought that was a new experience to work out of their home. But for me, I've been doing it for decades. And I always wondered, you know, gee, you know, how am I going to make a living, you know, to maybe have to go work for the post office or something. I mean, I was thinking this decades ago. And it turns out if you got a computer and you can watch the markets, you can pick out some nice income here and there. And that's what we learned as a floor trader decades ago, where the guys on the floor just think of it as making a living every day, like a paycheck. They don't look at it as long-term investing or anything like that. They just try to eke what they can out of the markets on a day or two basis, and some make very good livings doing that and don't worry about any of the other nonsense. But there are changes around the planet that aren't very good for us. So the question is, what is your perspective? You know, just making a living day to day or trying to invoke some change, like getting rid of the Federal Reserve. So we'll see.
Well, Nestle, I think, who's the biggest seller of bottled water, the head of Nestle, I think, said he doesn't believe humans have a right to water. It's just a commodity.
So we don't have a right to it, meaning we have to fend for it ourselves?
Well, you have to buy it from Nestle.
I'll just buy it from them, I see.
Yeah, okay. And they pay pennies on hundreds or thousands of gallons when they suck it out of your local aquifer and then sell it back to you at a football game at $6 a bottle.
Well, I unfortunately sold my ranch in Sedona, but I had a well there, and I used to pump all the water, you know, from 800-900 feet down. I had my own well, which I'm working on restoring at some point. So here, we can be independent that way, not Nestle or City Water, where they put chemicals and other stuff in, chlorine or whatever they do. That'd be a healthier life, I suppose, for all of us. But not everybody can do this. So again, we're pawns in a big game.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, any action on the crude oil market?
Oh, it's been great this past couple of weeks. Start to break out, start to move. You know, there was a lot of bearishness out there. I mean, you know, it's going to trade around. You know, I'm a big bull, and I guess I'm following in the steps a little bit of Warren Buffett. And I kept mentioning, you know, just do what Warren Buffett does. You know, look, he owns 25% of Occidental Petroleum. You think this man is stupid? I mean, you know, crude oil is what? It was in the mid-60s. Now it approached $80 a barrel. And, you know, my long-term forecast is about $200 a barrel, and whether that's 2 years or 10 years. So, you know, Warren's buying Occidental Petroleum in the $60 range. He'll probably sell it at $200 or $300 a share when crude oil gets to those levels, and he's patient. You know, of course, he's almost 90 or over 90 years old now, so I don't know if he'll be around to see those prices, but maybe it'll happen sooner rather than later. Crude oil is in a big uptrend overall. You know, OPEC wants to raise prices, cut back supply. You know, Russia makes its living off oil. You know, rest of the world depends on it to a great degree. We don't have enough electricity to power EV vehicles planet-wide, nor do people have the money to spend on it, nor is it practical, because then if you don't have power, you don't have transportation. So you're better off having a gasoline engine or a hybrid engine that does both, I suppose. Or, you know, maybe someone will come up with the technology to run it off solar or even nuclear at some point, so we could even forget about charging it at charging stations. But, I'm bullish. You know, it had a little bit of a breakout. There was this moving average that was holding it back, and it took it out. Now, it doesn't mean it can't settle back here in the next several weeks, perhaps. But I think you got to be long oil and oil-related stocks, and you have to take more than a, you know, 2 month perspective with them. I think there's going to be shortages because of government imposed restrictions, and there's worldwide demand for it, and it's going to get worse. You know, so you know, Biden may have done the crude oil business the biggest favor in the world by restricting, you know, drilling and permits and discouraging carbon fuels here in the U.S. and creating shortages, which are going to drive prices up. So if you're a bull on any particular market, that's one to be bullish on.
If the BRIC countries come out with a gold-backed currency, what's that going to do to gold itself?
You would think that it would support it. It depends what they value gold at, you know, pegging gold at what price. You know, when Nixon took us off the gold standard in 71, you know, gold was what, way down there. I don't know, it was $30 or $50 an ounce.
$35 an ounce.
Yeah, 35. I remember, you know, at the time when it happened, and, you know, I was in my late 20s when that happened, so it's been a while, but I remember people jumping all over it, and they were, oh, my God, it could go to 100 or 120, and they couldn't believe it could go that high, and, you know, look what happened since. The big problem with gold, and again, this gets back to, and I have to bring up issues like the plunge protection team and things people don't want to talk about or hear about, there has been and continues to be government suppression and involvement in the gold and silver market. And it's gone on for decades. And there's thousands of pages of research and anecdotal and factual information about this. And there's a place you can go for that. I mentioned the group. It's called GATA.org, G-A-T-A.org. And they got 20 years of documentation going back, I mean, well before that, about what's going on in the gold market and the way gold is being lent from one bank to the next. And they lease the gold, and we don't know what's actually there. And when they did an inspection of Fort Knox, you know, decades ago, they went to one room. They didn't look at the other rooms. There may not even been gold at Fort Knox anymore. You know what I mean? They give the impression it's there. It might have been old sold and given away to China for all we know. I mean, they just don't disclose it. And then you've got the problem with the futures exchange, the COMEX, which is a paper market. And, you know, if you got an unlimited bank account, and we're like the government does, and you want to suppress the price of gold, you just sell a bunch of gold contracts, and you keep hitting the bid, and you drive the price down, but you have no gold behind it, which is the whole reason the commodity and futures markets are created as hedges, particularly in the agricultural field. But if you got you know, manipulators out there trying to play with it, and you've got, you know, a big purse, and you can just keep hitting bids or hold prices down, whether you own gold or don't own gold, you can suppress the market. And this has been going on forever. I mean, gold should be a lot higher and silver a lot higher. But, you know, government didn't want that to happen because it made them look bad. One of the reasons that Nixon took us off the gold standard was Charles de Gaulle, you know, had U.S. dollars that were convertible into gold, and he started asking for the gold, and we didn't have enough gold to exchange those dollars, so we had to close the window. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we went off the gold standard. Apparently, we didn't have enough gold, and maybe still don't, to back the currency. And there's a whole economic theory out there. Well, you don't need to back the currency. You know, we just have the full faith and credit of the government. Well, what's the government worth when it's trillions of dollars in debt and you have inflation soaring everywhere? And, you know, history says that, currencies go to the way of the dodo. I mean, eventually they evaporate because of mismanagement. And you know, the U.S. dollar alone has lost almost 98% of its value since 1913 when the Fed was created. So gold is a place to be long-term, but how do we get the government out of the business of manipulating the gold market is the question, and whether that's changing or not changing. And it's a big question, but if you just look at the charts and the technical stuff, we're due, you know, we've had, they call it knocking at the door. You know, we've gotten up three times to that 2080 level, again, priced in U.S. dollars. Now, we're not talking about Canadian dollars or other dollars, which were already into new record highs prior to now. But, you know, you get to that level, technically, you know, it's a breakout, and, you know, you could be headed, you know, the 2600, 2800 an ounce the next, you know, couple, the 3 or 4 years or so, maybe sooner. So it's known as momentum. You know, it's like people buying Apple computer, and it sort of feeds on itself because, oh, it's going up, buy more, keep going up and buy more. So once gold gets going, you know, whether the government intervention or not will be a factor, time will tell. But there's momentum there, and silver certainly is behind the eight ball too here. It's been suppressed for years, and you know should easily trade back up to the $50 level, if not higher. It'll follow as gold moves. So the question is timing. When is this going to all happen? And in the last 2-3 years, we've had these big rallies, and we fail, go up to the 2000 level, we come back to 1600-1700, then we go up again, and then we come down again. So if you're trading, it's great. If you're sitting there with the gold on the table, waiting for it to sell it at 5000 an ounce, you could be 200 years old by the time that happens. I have no idea by the time that happens when it's going to happen. So for the gold bulls' benefit, hopefully it's sooner rather than later, and the cycles that I study seem to suggest the next, 2-3 years should be really good for gold. But, you got to withstand the swings, or you just hold the coins and, be patient. But silver is really the catch-up play on a percentage basis, I think. So gold goes from 1900 to 2400. Well, silver goes from $23 to $35, $40. That's a better, percentage gain. So silver may be the better play, both for its industrial uses and solar panel uses and so forth, but also as a speculation. So interesting stuff going on out there, and I'm bullish. I don't know if they're going to break out, in the next 6 months or 2 months or 2 weeks. So we had a nice run here a few days ago, and then we started to pull back here the last few days. And a lot had to do with the fact that the U.S. dollar, as you know, was coming down. And that was good for the commodity market and for gold in particular. Then the last few days, the U.S. dollar started to rally, so that put a dent into the commodity rally, including gold. So we've got to watch the dollar and see if which direction that's going. And there are times where these markets diverge, by the way, and you got to study each market separately. You don't have to have an inverse relationship, but generally that is the case. But you got to watch the charts and watch carefully what's really happening out there. So if something happens with the BRIC situation that you just mentioned in August, that could, that could change the charts really fast. If all these countries start saying, well, we're backing this new currency only with gold, and we're going to value gold at 5,000 an ounce, or what value they're going to put on a per ounce of gold to back the currency. But that decision will have a lot to do with where the gold will be, I'm sure. So it'll be interesting to see how they pull it off and what parameters surround the creation of that new currency. So we're in interesting times. I would expect some volatility between now and early September in the gold market. It should be a nice trading opportunity.
What's going on the geocosmic front?
Well, it just happened in the last, a few hours, a couple of days. I don't know if this interests many people out there, but I always watch stuff like this because, we're pawns in a bigger game, not only because of government and manipulation, but to the realm of the geocosmic, because things happen we have no control over. And like, for example, right now, there's a big far side sunspot out there. Now, some of the people listening to this are, what the hell do I care about a sunspot? Well, it turns out that this sunspot is so large, it's affecting the way the whole sun vibrates. And there was a coronal mass ejection, that's a CME, they call it, that hit the solar orbiter, which is one of our satellites that circled the sun a couple days ago. And it was so strong that it either damaged it or destroyed it. I'm not sure what happened to it, but it sure knocked the stuffings out of it. And the literature says that if that solar energy had not hit the solar orbiter, which was on the far side of the sun, and come toward the Earth, we would have had some severe geomagnetic storms here on the planet. So, we can lollygag around, and look at the sky and everything is fine. Next thing you know, a meteorite comes through your bedroom ceiling, as I heard happened up in Canada recently, and almost killed somebody, but missed them. There's things that happen that you have no control over: the weather, the planet, the sun, the earthquakes that are around, the record heat we're having around the planet now. So all these things have effects, and that's why we pay some attention to them. Whether we can't change them, but I'd rather be aware of them than not be aware of them. The funny thing is, if an asteroid was actually coming to the Earth, that's a whole different subject, and really was going to knock us out, I'm not so sure they would tell us. It probably is better off they didn't, because the panic would be uncontrollable. So, you know, maybe being a little dumb about all these things is not so bad. But for me personally, it's just a love and the study of what's happening that's outside of human control. So that's just one thing that's happening. But I think the big story is the record heat everywhere, and I'm sure all the global warming people are jumping up and down about the fact that man created all this, which is ridiculous. But we are in some type of warming cycle on the planet. So, and we got the oceans warming up, and that's affecting the weather, the El Nino effect. That active volcano, Krakatoa area, I forget the name of it, that's out there. Jim, you probably know the name, is warming the seas out in the Pacific. That's part and parcel to the problem, too. So we got, 43 active volcanoes on the planet now, warming things up. We just have to hope that Yellowstone doesn't blow.
Well, exactly, a super volcano. The crater for Yellowstone is something like 250 miles across. That's a bit of a volcano.
Yeah, well, I try to go up there when I can. I haven't been there for a while, but I'm more than aware that if that thing blows, I don't have to worry about myself so much. But it'd be like the dinosaur age, so the end of the dinosaur age for us here in the Western Hemisphere, and perhaps for good parts of the world, too, if something like that blew. But it has happened in the past, and I think you told me the story about what happened when Krakatoa went off over 150, 200 years ago. Remind me of that. You could hear it across the world. It was so massive, and it caused cooling on the planet. You know, so these things have effects.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Have a great day. Thanks for talking to me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.